I feel like that is going to be a big game changer for the Canadian ag tech market. And I think that's where the opportunity is right now. And I think we've set ourselves up to capitalize that as long as we make some smart decisions and invest in the right things. I get pretty excited about that.
Welcome to Canada's Agri-Food Opportunity, the road to $25 billion, a podcast by Protein Industries Canada. My name is Delaney Seiferling, and I'm a freelance journalist with a focus on Canadian agriculture and food production. Last episode, we heard about Protein Industries Canada's plan to capture $25 billion worth of opportunity in the plant protein sector by supporting the evolution of the egg industry from commodities to value-added products. We also heard that a critical part of this plan will be growing the ingredient manufacturing sector in Canada, which will require an estimated $6 to $9 billion of capital investment. On top of that, funding has become much tighter in recent years, including a lack of equity investment for large infrastructure and capital projects. But despite these challenges, many within the industry remain optimistic that the $25 billion goal is achievable. Our guests today are two of these people, both with much experience and expertise to back up their claims. They're going to walk us through how these challenges can be overcome. So our first guest is part of a startup company that has created a roadmap of its own in the ag tech space. Jason McNamee is the COO of Lucent Bioscience, a biotech company based in Vancouver, BC, that has raised $22 million, $12 million in equity and $10 million in grants. Our second guest is someone who knows the private investment side of the equation very well. Kyle Scott is managing partner of Emertech, a $60 million venture capital fund with roots in Saskatchewan. The firm specializes in ag tech and agribusiness innovation. So thanks to you both so much for being here today. And nice to see you both again. Jason, let's start with you and the Lucent Biotech story. So I've had the privilege of talking to you before, so I know this fun fact. You guys actually started out as a deep sea research company working with plankton. So I'm curious how you went from that to developing a micronutrient fertilizer product.
Thanks, Delaney. And that is a fun fact, but it is actually this sort of different, you know, looking at a way to deliver nutrients differently that allowed us to look at how we could apply that same technology in the agricultural space. We developed a technology whereby we would attach the crop nutrition to low-value food processing co-products like starches and celluloses, and we would attach them in such a way that they wouldn't leach or tie up or oxidize, yet still remain bioavailable. That was really the secret in delivering the nutrients differently. So our nutrients are delivered through the activity of the soil microbiome rather than the current suite of solutions, which are typically delivered through just the soil, water, and water chemistry.
Can you give us a brief overview of Soleos, the product? So what is it, first of all? How is it made and what problems does it solve?
Right. It's a dry granular fertilizer, like any dry granular fertilizer that you see. We make it in Rosetown, Saskatchewan. We take the hulls, we take actually oat hulls, we process them into a smaller, finer grain product. We put it through our proprietary reaction mechanism, and out the other end comes this highly durable pellet that has about 10% potassium in it, 5% sulfur, and then it has around 10% of a micronutrient. It really is the micronutrient that is our secret sauce, because typically micronutrients are large cations. I don't want to get too fancy here, but big positively charged ion. And in all of the soils that we have, there are a lot of negatively charged particles, because all clay minerals, people in Saskatchewan are pretty used to clay, especially now during mud season. And typical products get caught up in that interaction between positive and negative ions, whereas our products, because they go through the soil microbiome, don't have that tie-up problem, which means we get an on-time delivery of those nutrients and our environmentally controlled delivery of those nutrients, which allows the farmer on the other end to maximize their return on their investment.
How many years of R&D went into developing this and testing its effectiveness in these areas?
I would say R&D never really stops. You're always optimizing the product and different versions of the product, but really it probably took us 4 years of R&D / trialing, talking. You know, the R&D also kind of has to go into the industry. You have to know what your customers want. You have to know what the industry will accept, what are the right price ranges and that sort of thing, in addition to developing the core R&D. So yeah, that took us, you know, at least 4 years.
And you mentioned last time we spoke that you did a lot of testing on, you know, the effectiveness of the product. You did field trials, you did farmer trials with it, and you generated a lot of third-party data on this. So why was that important to you guys?
You know, we ran, you know, over 120 small plot research trials and over 240 replicated strip plot trials with farmers and retailers, so that we knew A, that our product worked, but B, where it worked, what crops it worked best on, what areas it worked best on, like which kind of soil types, and what we also were able to get a lot of the customer feedback. Did they like the product? Did it blend well? Did it go out well through equipment? So when we were having conversations with retailers and when we were also, you know, raising capital, we were able to answer very confidently these questions to people that were going to be the key decision makers.
You mentioned raising capital. So at what point in your journey did you guys start seeking capital investment, and what did that look like? Like, was there, did you start off with a very specific strategy for doing this, or was it something that you kind of just figured out as you went along?
First of all, once we figured out that we had a technology that was good and it worked, we started going, well, we need to tell people. And so we started doing pitch contests.
Okay.
Which was, it was really fun, actually. And the very first one we ever did was called the Seattle Angel Conference, because we were in Vancouver. And it's the winner that gets $125,000, which, you know, at a time with a struggling company, that would be a big deal. And it turned out we won that Seattle Angel Conference. And we were like, man, we really got something here.
Okay.
And then the next pitch I did actually was in March of 2019. It was at Taylor Field in Regina, Saskatchewan, at the AGT Lounge at the launch of the Protein Industry Canada Supercluster. And I got second place in that one. I made $1,200, which paid for the ticket to Regina. Nice. But it was right around that time where we had raised money through these angel groups. We had won, you know, got second place in this other pitch. We were like, we have something real here. And now we need to validate it and we need some capital. That's when we started going to the capital markets.
So that pitch that you just told us about in Regina was also when you met Murad Al-Khatib of AGT Foods. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was a great opportunity though. I mean, this is, you know, why you have events like that and why you do pitch competitions, because just before I got on stage for the pitch, Murad had been on stage doing what they call a fireside chat. And one of the things that he had mentioned is they were looking for better uses for the whole seed, including, you know, tens of thousands of tons of fiber that they needed. And I was thinking to myself, well, but that's what we need. We need the fiber. And when I got on stage to do my pitch, Murad happened to be on the judges panel. And so I was basically just talking to him during that pitch. And after the pitch, he came over and talked to me, and you know, he could see clearly that we had a solution to improve the value of his fiber stream, and he gave me his business card, and we've been friends ever since.
And more than friends, you guys have developed a formal partnership. And let's talk about that. So in 2020, you guys, along with AGT Foods, which by the way is a pulse export and processing company based in Regina for people that don't know, but you guys received $2.3 million in project funding, with $1.3 million of that coming from Protein Industries Canada and the remainder from the Projects Consortium. So tell me about how your partnership with AGT evolved and how it has been beneficial to you guys.
Well, I think that at that point when we received that grant from to work with T, really is where we dove headfirst into scaling the product from lab to something that was usable. But we really focused on this independent research, because we wanted to show not only to, but to our partners at AGT Foods and Ingredients, that the product worked and we had an idea of where it worked and how it worked. So that first year we ran 32 small plot research trials, again, all over Canada and some in the United States. And with those results, when they came back and they showed some very significant improvements in yield and above ground biomass, that gave us the confidence to take the next step.
I just want to go back to something you mentioned earlier when you won your first pitch contest in the United States. So I know you guys were based in Canada to begin with, but at any point throughout your growth process, and especially at that point, did you ever consider it might be easier for you, your company, to grow in this sector somewhere else, like the United States? And what factors kept you here in Canada?
Good question. You know, the when we won the Seattle Angel Conference, there were a number of investors that were interested in investing with us and, you know, bringing the technology to the U.S. right away. Because, you know, we're in Vancouver. It's not very far from the U.S. Mm-hmm. But it was really not long after that that you know, I did that pitch, which we talked about earlier. And that's what was, like, immediately clear when we went to Regina to do that pitch, which I'm from Wilcox, Saskatchewan, by the way, very far from Regina. So it was kind of like coming home. But, you know, the thing is, you have real deep industry knowledge and an industry that is very welcoming of innovation. And I talk about it a lot, about the innovation that springs out of Saskatchewan in particular. And so when you're in that environment that's looking for and hungry for innovation, and then you have programs like PIC that help you validate your innovation, it was very clear to us, and that this is where we need to be. And these, you know, Canada is the right place to develop this technology.
I wanted to ask you a question that's a little off topic, but I'm going to go for it anyway. I know by trade, Jason, you're a scientist and you've been involved really heavily on the R&D side of things. So I've been curious, like, when you started working heavily on the fundraising side of things, did that take you out of your comfort zone? And if yes, how did you deal with that?
It did not take me out of my comfort zone, because my part of the story that we're telling is, as the engineer, as the scientist, and that's the part that I know. But we have a strong team. It's not just me. You know, our CEO, Michael Redike, you know, he's built and scaled 3 companies in the past. He knows, you know, where we need to get insurance. He knows how to put a P&L together. Like, so between the two of us, we make a really good team. And so, you know, for me to tell my part of the story is not hard. And for him to tell his part of the story is not hard. And now that we've been together for, you know, 4 or 5 years scaling this company, we can tell each other's story now. So, you know, going out to raise capital wasn't that hard. But kind of to go back to the start of the story, if you don't get out and tell your story, like these pitch competitions and whatnot that we're doing, A, you won't get good at telling your story, and B, you're not going to be able to find it's going to be harder to find the capital to raise.
As I mentioned in the introduction, you guys have raised $22 million, $12 million in equity. That's a pretty good track record, especially in the current environment and climate. So I'm curious what you attribute your success here to. And also, what are the most important lessons you've learned along the way in terms of attracting private equity, government funding, and also forming beneficial relationships?
I'll go back to the building credibility through understanding what your products are, how they work, having independent third parties validate and verify that, then going out to the market, understanding what is in the market, how your materials or your products stand up against those other products, testing them side by side, understanding the scale and the scope of that market. Having that all together in one package is really what I believe is the key to, to success.
But how beneficial have your partnerships been along the way? Like you're, you know, meeting Murad from AGT and, making links with Protein Industries Canada and others in that sector.
Well, I mean, again, Kyle's going to probably talk a little bit more about this, but had we not developed those relationships, the likelihood that we would have been able to raise capital or at least and raise capital on favorable terms would have been very low. Mm-hmm. And so again, you can't get these partnerships if you A, don't know what you're talking about, and B, don't get out and then talk about what is good independently verified data. That's how you build the credibility and build the relationships, and then in steps, then you have a better opportunity for the capital raise.
What advice would you give to others that are in the seed or series A or just early fundraising stages?
Know your market, have independently verified data, and practice your story. Those are the main thing. And then get out and talk about it. There's pitch groups all over the place. There's Startup TNT. There's all kinds of places. There are international pitch competitions. Get out and talk about it. That is really the only way that you're going to attract the attention and also attract the attention of the right.
One more thing you mentioned the other day when we were chatting that you have a 5-word or less sales pitch for Solio. So I was just curious what it was.
We deliver nutrients differently.
Nice. Okay. On that note, I'm going to move over to Kyle. So Kyle, let's talk about Emmertech. Can you give us a quick background about Emmertech? Why was it created? Why the focus on ag tech?
Sure. So it's pretty straightforward answer, I think. The reason we created Emmertech is because we think agriculture is the most important industry in the world. If you look at where an individual can make the biggest impact, it's hard to pinpoint something else that you could do with your life. It's the bottom of Maslow's hierarchy. Everybody eats, has water, drinks every day. It's hard to imagine spending time on something else that's more worthwhile. In terms of from an investment standpoint as well, if you look at long-term tail across any sector, you always have these blips that come up. So if you want to go into manufacturing, well, you might be manufacturing something that's displaced in the next five years, 10 years, 15 years, as an example. When you go into producing food and dealing with water, it's not going anywhere. Humans need it. And so when you take a longer term perspective, it's exciting. And I think that part of our fundamental philosophy was we wanted like-minded partners who felt the same way, felt long-term and understood ag. And so I think for us, we sat there and went, this is something that we're really excited to build, but we want to do it with the right people. And we were fortunate enough to be able to find them.
I'm curious how many companies are currently in your portfolio. And since today we're talking specifically about food processing and manufacturing, I'm wondering how many companies would fit into that space.
Yeah. So right now we have 9 what we would call core portfolio companies where we've made a significant investment into them. And then we have another 11 companies that we've made smaller investments into through our partnership with the AgTech Accelerator based in Regina. And so if you take it all total, it's 20 across there. And to your question about how many are in food processing, Lucent would probably be the closest to fit that. And it's food processing adjacent in a lot of ways. We've certainly looked at a lot of opportunities in food processing. One of the challenges you run into is our whole fund for Emmertech is a $60 million fund. And to construct one of those facilities can often be, you know, $75 million, $100 million, $200 million. Mm-hmm. And so to try to make an investment work out of our fund, it's just not really a great fit. It's just size-wise for that. Right. There's other types of capital for that.
When you guys are considering investing in a new startup, what do you look at? Is there a process that you go through, or does it kind of vary case by case?
Yeah, it can be a bit artisanal, meaning a bit unique for each company. So if we're looking at a company like Lucent, as Jason rightly pointed out a few times there, actually, that, you know, trial and efficacy data and making sure that that's third-party validated, that becomes a big part of our due diligence to get to an actual investment decision. So it can be different, but the general idea is you look at the industry. So take agriculture and break that out into whatever component parts you want. And you kind of do a deep dive on what does the competitive landscape look like there? Is this really a unique product? Does it, to Jason's point earlier, actually drive ROI, which okay. is where our limited partners, our investors, often provide a lot of value in understanding that. So that's kind of the industry stuff you do. You then move over into, let's understand the financials of this company. And so you have to build out a financial model, understand how that works, and then figuring out how you're going to be able to finance it. And then it's not the last thing, but one of the other things that matters a lot is the management team or the founders of the business as well. So it would never happen where we would be giving someone $1 million or $2 million and we've never met them in person or spent significant time with them. So we spend a lot of time with the management teams and the founders to make sure that we're aligned. Whenever we make an investment, we like to think about it like it's going to be a 5, 10, 15 year marriage. We're going to be speaking, if not every day, at least every week, and texting every day, that kind of stuff. And we sure as heck better be aligned on the vision of the business we're building, but also just like genuinely like each other. So that when the phone lights up, you're both ways, you're excited to answer it, not dreading what's going to be on the other end of the phone. So those are kind of the big three buckets. There's a bunch of other stuff, but those would be the big ones.
So how frequently do you and Jason talk to each other?
It sort of depends. Sometimes it's 3-4 times a day. Sometimes it's sometimes we'll go a whole week without exchanging a text or an email or something. So kind of depends on the day, but pretty frequent.
Okay. Yeah. That's a lot. Okay. And is there a general time frame that your due diligence process takes? Or again, I would imagine that varies, but.
Yeah, it does. It varies on a bunch of things. So if it's a space that we've invested in before, know it really well, that can make it go quick. Okay. If the company has really good legal documents as well, like one of the things that's underappreciated when it comes to our business is that how a company is structured from the start matters a lot for us, not only to make sure that the founders and the management team own a significant part of the business and have real skin in the game to want to see it through and are aligned with us. But it can also come down to silly little things like, oh, is your shareholders agreement kind of goofy? Hmm. And like, we need to go through and redo. Like that can add 2 or 3 weeks to a process. But to answer your question more generally, by the time we issue terms or agree on terms with the company, it's usually something like 4 or 5 weeks. Usually doesn't drag on too long. There are examples that prove me wrong, both shorter and longer that we've done, but generally speaking, that's what we would target.
When a company like Lucent has done so much background work on their own, that's obviously very helpful to your process then.
Yeah, it is exceptionally helpful, probably to the point that if it hadn't been done, we probably wouldn't have taken it seriously. So it would be one of the 2 or 3 gating items for us right out of the bat.
Related to that, I guess, what would be your advice to companies that are looking for capital, and especially knowing right now that funding is tight?
Yeah, it is. It's starting to loosen a little bit,
okay.
Especially in agriculture. I think people are coming back around now that we've certainly seen that out in the market. But I think one of the first things you can do is just like learn a little bit of the language of finance. It's really just imagine yourself if you're going to go out and speak to a customer who's going to be buying your product and you couldn't you couldn't explain your value proposition to them. You couldn't explain to them why they should purchase it, like all of those kind of things. Well, imagine you're going out to sell equity in your company to an investor, and you don't really speak their language. You don't really understand how to communicate the value prop of your company to them. I think that it can be extremely helpful. You don't have to be like a complete finance dork like me or something like that, but just learn a little bit of the language and just be able to have big ears and opening to listening and trying to engage. Admit when you don't understand or know something. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that, but being able to have a nice back and forth is good. And then the other thing that's super important to me personally is I'm very, very pro team. I'm not a big fan of the superhero go it alone founder who's like they are the single tip of the spear, all of that kind of stuff. And there's this really nice collection of skills, capabilities, different areas of knowledge you can really leverage off each other. It feels to me like that's a much better flywheel than just having a single point that kind of does everything. So when you're going out and raising capital, I think it's really important to be able to highlight that you have a team behind you, and that you've. It's also really helpful because it's a pretty good indicator if you've been able to attract awesome people to come and build something with you. It probably means that you're going to be really good at finding customers or pivoting the business if you need or raising more money later. So that would be one of the other things I would say.
How important in your mind are partnerships? Like, the one between Lucent and AGT and partnerships with groups like Protein Industries Canada. How important are those to the success of these startup companies?
I think again, much like what I said, it's imperative. The ecosystem and collaborative approach that Protein Industries Canada sort of mandates to everyone participating, I actually quite love it. It forces companies to think that way. In agriculture, like it or not, you're competing in a global market. Like there's no such thing as just like a localized market for competition there. And when you have a sector of like the global economy that's just like that big and that complicated, to think that you're just going to go it alone is I don't know that it's a great recipe for success. And so finding companies who have already been successful in that is super important. It's a nice track record to see that not only do they view the world the same way that I do, they've actually been able to execute on it. And so something like that is super, super helpful for us when we see it. And obviously with Lucent, we know Murad and AGT, and we know Protein Industries Canada, and both are just phenomenal partners, and certainly was helpful for us.
Let's switch a little bit here. So, like I mentioned in the introduction, it's pretty well known that ag tech investments in Canada are small compared to those of other countries. And just to give people a sense of this, our recent RBC report showed that Canadian startups have captured only 3% of global VC and private equity investment in ag tech since 2017. And that's compared to 55% in the US. And those values are 1 billion versus 20 billion. So that really gives you, like I used the word minuscule on the introduction, and it's true. So why is that, in your opinion, Kyle?
It's complicated. There haven't been a lot of people who have been interested in investing in ag tech who also have the combination of skills to actually like administer like a fund and stuff like that. What's really encouraging right now is you're starting to see more and more come together right now. Like we've got three or four new funds specifically focused on ag tech in Canada just within the last couple of years. And that's actually super exciting for us. Like much like I said before on the collaboration point, like we've never done a deal alone without going in with another investor group, and we probably never would. And so we're super excited to see that. The For better or for worse, I guess. I don't think that there's been a lot of MBAs and finance types looking at agriculture in the past. Mm. And so has its pluses and minuses. Your pluses are you're not necessarily co-opted by that thinking that some other industries found themselves in. But yeah. The downside being I have the best job in the world, but it can actually be quite technical, tedious, and boring in the background a lot of the time. And so there aren't, you kind of have to find this special mix of people who really understand agriculture, are excited about it, mm-hmm. plus really understand finance and financial acumen and all that kind of good stuff and partner mm-hmm. them together. Mm-hmm. And it's difficult to find that. And then if you just look at it, where our pools of capital are in Canada, like they're in downtown Toronto, Montreal, mm-hmm. Vancouver. I know it sounds like a cliche to say it, but it's really, really true. There would be a number of folks who are sitting within those types of investment funds and stuff who have certainly never set foot in a grain elevator,
right.
Or walked in a canola field in Saskatchewan or something like that. So from their perspective, I completely understand. It's a new asset class. It has violent swings up and down. It's really complicated. It's global. It's competitive. It's hard. And so I understand why it might be easier to go and focus on like a B2B SaaS company or something like that. Or yeah. Nice month over month, we have new subscribers and all that kind of thing. And so when I take that all together, I go, I think that our pools of capital just have not in the past been traditionally focused on this area, mainly mm-hmm. because of where the expertise and capability would come from. You right. want to invest in stuff you understand. And then what gives me kind of hope going forward is there's more and more like-minded groups like us at Emertech, where I think that we can change that trend that you highlighted there.
Right. Obviously, you guys view this as an opportunity. It's why your fund was created in the first place. So
absolutely.
You're kind of alluding to the fact that you guys, you know, you see a lot of opportunity where others maybe haven't traditionally, which is why you exist. So tell me what are the factors working in our favor here? You've already gone over this briefly, but I really want to drill home. Like, there are so many advantages to growing this industry in Canada and developing this industry in Canada. So can you go through some of those in your opinion? And also, what are the advantages of growing and scaling as a company in Canada?
Yeah, for sure. So I think, it's just such a broad, maybe for this one, I'll just focus on like, processors,
sure.
for example, because I think if you look at the report that Protein Industries Canada, put out, as you outlined at the front, something like a $25 billion opportunity, $6 to $9 billion, investment, is that like we have access to the best feedstock in the world. When you think about food processing, so I'm thinking about protein crops, whether pulses, oilseeds, whatever it is, that gives you just a significant cost advantage, where you can just co-locate right next to some of the highest yielding crops in those categories in the world. So you automatically have a win there. The second one is we have an amazing amount of energy in this country as well, and an amazing amount of water. And so when you talk about just like the natural resource infrastructure inputs you need, we have a really big advantage there. We also have like a really entrepreneurial community in Canada. And I think that some of the entrepreneurs we come across, especially in the food processing space, like they dream big, and they recognize the opportunity here, and with the right sort of incentives or pools of money, that they could really execute on something. And I think the final one, that because we're too Canadian, we don't talk about enough, like our brand, especially like the Canada brand, especially when it comes to agriculture around the world, is astonishing. And so if you look at sort of our natural resources, our ability to flex up our infrastructure pretty easily, and the global brand that we have, especially when it comes to agriculture, it's kind of hard to say that we don't have a right to win in that space.
Just building on that, how can we grow this potential? So how can entities in this sector, including Protein Industries Canada and government at all levels, nurture more private investment in this sector and take advantage of some of these inherent benefits that you just mentioned? And in particular, how can we take the risk out of private investment in Canada in this space?
Yeah, so Protein Industries Canada actually does a pretty awesome job of this right now. And it'd be my opinion that the private capital community that we're actually letting down food processors. It's been our lack of ability to identify and build the right pools of capital that can actually go in to support it. And I don't 100% know what the issue is with it. If it's a poor articulation of the potential opportunity, if it's a poor articulation of the financial models underpinning, or what it is, but it seems to me that there is this massive opportunity. The federal government, much to its credit, is like with Protein Industries Canada plus some other things, mm-hmm. done a pretty nice job planting some seeds for it. But to actually scale this, mm-hmm. you can't have like a $60 million fund like Emirtech going out and financing 6, 7, 8 facilities that in aggregate are going to cost like $2 billion.
Right.
And so I think that for that specifically, you kind of need some purpose built, whatever you want to call it, doesn't really matter, that then is specifically targeted at that and is at a sufficient scale that you can finance it. And that's hard. Like, it's really, really hard to go and tell people that you're going to go stick a shovel in the ground on 7 different projects with 7 different management teams across whatever 4 or 5 different provinces to build out the plants or like whatever the processing infrastructure that you need. It's hard to do, but it's not, for starters, it's not impossible. And if it's not only an opportunity for private capital, it should be like borderline be an obligation because of mm-hmm. how significant the opportunity actually is there. Mm-hmm. And so I think that when it comes to what can you actually do, I don't think it's that different than what we've done in other sectors. Right. Like there's been a number of crown corporations that are big investors into funds, into like just general tech funds, right? Or life sciences or clean tech, for example, which I argue ag tech is clean tech by definition, but for some reason people like to break them apart. That's totally fine. But like things like that with just a special purpose built focus for it seems to be the only answer for it.
Jason, I wanted to ask you the same thing, if you had any insights onto that question, or, you know, looking back over your journey, what would have made it easier for you guys?
I think that the government of Canada has actually, and British Columbia and Saskatchewan governments have done a pretty good job at the startup stage. I think there's lots of different pots of money from IRAP to PIC to other pots of money to help with, you know, validate a concept. The hard part is not validating the concept. The hard part is going from validation of a concept to a scale up, which is, you know, we've just kind of crossed that moat now. And that was the hard part. And Protein Industries Canada was a big help in getting us across that. So from that perspective, I see, you know, I think they've done a pretty good job. I think the next step, which is, you know, building out our facility and other facilities, is, you know, where are the pools of capital for that? Is that like, I don't think that's a PIC type fund. I think it's something else, like Kyle's, you know, alluding to. Is there probably another pool of capital, or if it doesn't exist yet, maybe it's something that we need to look at.
Final question for both of you. Just wondering if you had any final thoughts on any of this, anything you think is important to add on top of what we've already talked about, anything you wanted to drive home, any message you wanted to leave the audience with. or call to action?
We've kind of touched on it a bit here, but I mean, the partnerships is super important. And also participating in those partnerships, like in like, for example, whether it's a IRAP project or a PIC project, you need to get to know the team that's helping you access the funding. I mean, you're building a partnership with them. You have to build a partnership with industry, and you have to build a partnership with your capital partners. And in each of those cases, it's not, and Kyle said it earlier, it's not like somebody you know for a couple of months. This is some, you know, someone that you want to work with, someone who's going to be your friend for the long term, you hope. And so I think that it's really important to participate in the industry, and that's what's going to enable the flow of capital and ultimately the validation of the innovation and the credibility of the company.
Yeah, I think I'd say that I was excited about EgTech in Canada when we were launching Emertech, and it's kind of only increased since then. Hmm. And right now, when you see some of the effects from the capital that's gone into the sector over the last, call it, 5 or 6 years, through Protein Industries Canada, our fund, a couple of other funds as well, what I'm starting to notice is a maturation of not only the founders, but of other ecosystem partners, in terms of what does it actually mean to start a company with an idea and test the idea and start growing from that idea. And I think right now we have a whole bunch of really strong companies that are just trying to jump that gap into growth. And I think that, to go back to your previous comment about why does Canada have less capital that flows in, just like on a dollar basis, that kind of thing. That's one of the things that we're missing, is where does the growth capital come from to take the next step? And really, instead of just thinking about new companies and tech as products and product discovery and product testing, is like, how do we underwrite the commercial growth of this business? Like, how do you invest in a company where it's going to now just start driving revenue? Mm-hmm. And it's not just about always the science-y aspects of it, which seems to be where a lot of the attention goes. And so I think that when I look out, hopefully when I look back 5 years, so go fast forward 5 years and look back to today, I'm very, very hopeful that what will be true is that there will be a bunch of really great growth stage companies that have rock solid tech and are just building out their commercial business. Great. Not that you don't need the other stuff, but I feel like that is going to be a big game changer for the Canadian ag tech market. And I think that's where the opportunity is right now. And I think we've set ourselves up to capitalize that as long as we make some smart decisions and invest in the right things. So I get pretty excited about that.
So you're optimistic, you're bullish on the future here.
Very much so, yeah.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of Canada's Agri-Food Opportunity, The Road to 25 Billion. I'm your host, Delaney. Thank you to our guests, Jason and Kyle, for sharing their insights and expertise with us today. We hope you can join us again next time. If you enjoyed today's episode and want to continue listening, please follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening to us to be notified about new episodes. You can also follow us on social media, subscribe to our newsletter, or visit our website at proteinindustriescanada.ca for current industry news and information. Canada's Agri-Food Opportunity, The Road to 25 Billion, is created and produced by Protein Industries Canada and supported by the Government of Canada.